kind of outrageous. David Silva thought it was in violation of state law. We didn't really push it to that point, but when I approached City Clerk Emma Solden on the evening of the last City Council meeting last Tuesday, she said that though they didn't have the action agenda, which actually gives you the votes of how council members voted on each of the various measures, she did have the final amended Beach Flats resolution that reached a final 7-0 vote on the about 2:30 in the morning on October 7th. So we got a copy of that, and Phil Baer has been looking that over. He's the Beach Flats activist and resident who really has been very high profile in getting information out about the Beach Flats and bringing Beach Flats Latino residents along with Jane Baer, equally high profile, equally active, Roxana Kistapache, a whole bunch of women and men getting together to do this. And he has a very interesting analysis for it, so we're going to go into that in a moment. There aren't any city council meetings coming up this week. There are some meetings happening. The Downtown Commission, for example, is meeting on Thursday, the 22nd, at 1 o'clock. That's the group that gave us the sit-on-the-sidewalk, go-to-jail laws, group that tried to get rid of the farmer's market, I believe. I could be wrong about that. That certainly the Downtown Association was involved with that. Downtown Commission is a government body. The group that helped close the Riverside at night, I have a particular focus on this group in terms of what seems to be their anti-homeless actions that close public spaces. So that has been my focus. But if you want to follow what they're doing, show up on Thursday at City Hall at 1 p.m. and check them out. Of course, you might be better advised to go to San Francisco and do some real solidarity marching and shouting about police violence and the criminalization of a generation. And do that, you've got to get to Mission and 24th at 2 o'clock up in San Francisco, or get to San Jose at 11:30. And if you want more information about that, if you want to help with a carpool here, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. This is for the annual Wear Black protest against police violence. And you heard, of course, two organizers earlier, Marl and Ben, talking about their own project to document and stop police violence in Santa Cruz. There are other meetings this week. CAB, the Community Action Board, has a meeting at their Soquel Street office, 5:30 on Wednesday, the 21st. CAB has, in the past, held public hearings on poverty issues, I think once a year. I don't know how much they're going to be covering the election, considering the sleeping ban and where it's at the moment, laws against the poor. But they're worth keeping an eye on. Then on Thursday night, in case you can get back from San Francisco in time or didn't go, there is the next city council candidate forum that I'm aware of. That's up at UCSC Kresge College at 8 p.m. And this is probably the most radical forum, the forum before students, radical students, and more radical students. And maybe we'll actually see another face of the candidates, particularly the progressive candidates, Clark, Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and Crane, who have been backpedaling around the sleeping ban. Something you can read about, by the way, in the latest issue of the Street Shit Sheet, a homeless newsletter which I put out, which came out yesterday. And you can find that downtown from vendors who usually sell street spirit. And possibly it will be coming as an insert into Starstruck, which is Tom Connor's entertainment-oriented, issues-oriented monthly publication. He's put out two issues of a street paper called Starstruck, which concerns itself with Santa Cruz issues. Tom Connor is a street magician who you can often see in the Woolworth's Gap area on Friday and Saturday nights, wowing the crowds. That's Tom Connor. And that's some of the events that we've got coming up. Interesting stuff. And I hope that you participate, because it is your public participation that really makes the difference here. You can participate in free radio by giving us a call. We're at 427-3772, letting us know, have you been abused by police? Have you been beaten? Have you been harassed? Or do you have something good to say about the police department? They've been particularly helpful to you lately. Have you seen a change in their harassment tactics down on Pacific Avenue? We want to keep our finger to the wind and see what's cooking with the department downtown, particularly regarding poor people. It's only about 2 weeks until Election Day, and that's really closing fast upon us. If 3 progressives are elected, there is a good chance, in my view, that there will be changes in the sleeping ban, even though the candidates seem to be getting more and more coy about what they were seen to be pretty outspokenly in favor of 2 months ago, namely changing the language of the sleeping ban to make it legal to sleep in some parts of the city, which seems pretty obvious in accord with the Constitution, federal law, UN charter, federal court decisions in Miami, I should say, basic common sense, fiscal sensibility. I don't know. One gets tired of repeating this long laundry list of the obvious to people who make it their practice to deny the obvious and to insist on the cruel and the brutal, because that's what the sleeping ban is. I wanted to announce David Silva is concerned about the sleeping ban. He's the coordinator for the initiative to repeal the ban, which though it fell short on the number of votes it got last May, the organizers are still pressing to have it brought back and need funding to do that. And if you want more information about the ban, you can give a call to David Silva and his fundraising effort at 429-5284. Also want to announce this time that a possible forum we had on the ban with Sarah Amir a week from last Saturday hasn't really panned out. So it really, with all the election pressure, we cannot do a forum in the midst of this election process. Though the ban, we hope, will continue to be one of the very important issues that candidates have to direct themselves to wherever people with heart show up and raise that issue. So hopefully it will be raised at the, for example, UCSC forum. We have a call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, hi.
Hey, it's Bob LaMonica, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Well, good. I was going to ask you if you could relay known comments by so-called Santa Cruz progressives regarding the sleeping ban.
You know, I'm going to do that in about an hour. I have a taped segment coming up at which we hear these so-called progressives, as you and I both describe them, and I suppose they are progressive on a number of subjects. Certainly more progressive than, unfortunately, Steinau, Walton, and Quartararo on the sleeping ban. There's no question about that. But they do seem to be hedging, and I'm going to be playing some of their statements that they made at the Downtown Association Forum, which happened last Thursday. But unfortunately, I do have a man about to be reached whose brother is now serving 8 years in San Quentin. It's a rather shocking case and hasn't really been covered much in the papers, Bob, so I'm going to turn to that one in a three-way interview shortly, but I will get back to this issue of the election. I think the elections are very important, and particularly around issues. I couldn't care less about the personalities. It's the same old, you know, one thing before the election, another thing after. But
I happened to glance at a copy of your publication yesterday.
Hi, it's the Street Chitchie.
Yes, I was very... it was interesting, the comments of the so-called progressives regarding the sleeping ban.
Well, we can talk a little bit about that now, though, if you want. It might be more suitable, if you're going to be around in an hour, to kind of do it after you've heard their actual, the longer statements.
Yeah, I'd like that. That'd be good. I'll stay tuned.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Thanks, Bob.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
And I hope you stay tuned, too, because during this next musical number, we're actually going to hold the Phil Bear interview. I've babbled so long, we're going to have to wait till a little later in the show to hear that Phil Bear interview, and it's a very important one. It's a very detailed statement as to why the so-called City Council compromise was essentially a sellout, and that we really have to be very, very careful now that what we thought had disappeared has not disappeared. Anyway, let's take a little musical break, and then let's go to a case of judicial injustice and a case of essentially racist judicial injustice, which we'll be looking into shortly.
Marching down the street, rolling of the drums and the tramping of the feet. General salutes and mothers waving we. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid. Price is paid. One more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war. So willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same. So there's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade. Listen for the sound and listen for the noise. Listen for the thunder of the marching boys. Few years ago their guns were only toys. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid, price is paid, one more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war. So willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same. So there's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade. Medals on their coats and guns in their hands. Trained to kill as they're trained to stand. 10,000 years need only one command. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid, price is paid, one more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war. So willing to go and die on a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same. So there's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade. Cold hard stares on faces so proud. Kisses from the girls and cheers from the crowd. And the widows from the last war crying to their shrouds. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid, price is paid. Don't be ashamed, war's the game. World in flames, so start the parade.
Okay, well that was Phil Oakes, One More Parade. Really a great song from his album, Tape from California, which we like to play. On the line with us now, we are talking to Becky Johnson and to Juan Gutierrez. Hi, Becky. Hi, Juan.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
And Becky, I'm going to kind of turn this over to you because you have been covering this Gutierrez situation, the case of Miguel Gutierrez, your brother, Juan, and you've been kind of really doing some in-depth research into the subject. I guess you're going to be writing a story about it, right?
Oh, that's right. I've contacted Street Spirit, and they're very happy to run the story. They think that it represents a case of social injustice, and the exact sort of thing that Street Spirit has really become a landmark paper in bringing those issues to the public.
Street Spirit, of course, is the homeless paper. Comes out monthly. You can catch it down on Pacific Avenue. It's sold by homeless vendors, or if you want, you can give a call, I guess, to you, Becky, to get a sample copy of that paper.
Sure, that'd be fine.
That's at 429-8529. But all this aside, let's get into the meat of the issue. A year ago, something rather tragic happened in the Beech Hill area. Maybe you can, why don't you take it from there, Becky? And
sure. It was October 5th of 97, and Juan's brother, Miguel, although they call him Michael went to a party in the Beech Hill area of Santa Cruz, and when he arrived at the party, there were only a few people he knew. There were quite a few people that he didn't know that were there. He found that many of the people that were at the party were highly intoxicated. And a fight broke out between one of the few people that was there that he did know and another guy. And Michael is a kind of a big guy, and he waded into the fight in an attempt to break it up.
Let me interrupt you for a moment, Becky.
Sure.
Juan, how old is Michael?
He's 24 years old. And how old are you?
25.
And would you say the two of you are pretty close?
Yeah, close. You know, close brothers and gay, pretty much. Close brothers.
Okay.
I think the Gutierrez family is a very tight-knit family. There are six children, and the Gutierrez family have really been leaders in the Beach Flats neighborhood. They lived there for 22 years and only just recently moved away from that area.
So, Juan, I'm going to ask you to, of course, comment on what Becky's been describing, but Becky, maybe you should, why don't we start here? Does that cover so far what happened? Do you have anything to add about what you understand? You weren't at the party yourself, right?
No.
And did you talk, how did you learn about this afterward?
Well, my brother told us about, you know, what happened, you know, talking to his lawyer and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He pretty much saw I got, and, you know, he had told me something about it, but not into detail and stuff.
Well, Becky, why don't you go ahead and continue, and then we'll get Juan's reactions.
Yes. What happened?
There was a fight broke out, you said.
Right, and Mike was trying to break the fight up, and he ended up being attacked himself by some of the other partygoers, where they sort of three or four individuals jumped on him, and he found he was defending himself from everybody, and he was forced to start swinging back to protect himself. He was able to move a little further down the driveway at this house and was sort of ducking down to covering his head from the blows when he saw something on the ground that was shiny, and he picked it up, and it was a golf club. And he started swinging it around to cause the people who were attacking him to back off. And one guy apparently grabbed the golf club, and there was sort of a tug-of-war, a struggle that ensued at that point. Then Michael's friend, who had brought him to the party, tapped him on the shoulder and said, Mike, the car is here, let's get out of here. And so Mike grabbed his jacket and went up to the car, got in the car, and the last thing he did before he left was he threw the golf club into the bushes. Mike and his friend, later on, they went and got some fast food and went to another party later in that night. An issue that Judge Robert Attuck made a big issue about, that Michael had been so uncaring over, you know, this victim that he had left behind, that he had just, you know, gone on about his business as though nothing had happened. What we learned was that Michael didn't even realize that anyone had been injured until about 3 weeks later, on October 31st. He found out from another person who had been at the party that someone had been injured.
Let's talk to Juan about this. Juan, how does this, and speak loudly because the phone connection isn't terribly good, but how does this account you hear from Becky square with what you heard from Mike?
It's pretty much, you know, kind of the money.
Mm-hmm.
Except that, what else can I say about it? It was just, you know, my brother just went in to, like, you know, defend, like, break it up and stuff, and he just got attacked because he's a really big guy. You know, he's like 6'3 or 6'2 and 200-something pounds. And, you know, he's really calm. He's a calm person. He's, like, doesn't like to fight or nothing. It's just because of his size, you know, people just consider him, like, a threat, so, you know.
Do we know what kind of a party this was?
It's a house party gathering and stuff. They had invited my brother's friends, and, you know, he had said, hey, I got a couple of friends with me. Is it all right for them to go? And the girl said, sure, no problem. And when they showed up, you know, there was a lot of kids drinking and, you know, smoking weed and stuff, and that was like another issue, because I mean all these kids were saying they were drunk and stoned, and yet the cops, you know, took their statements instead and
totally like whatever, you know. They didn't even say, hey, how old are you? Why are you drinking? You know, all the, you know, all the little.
Now, were these kids mostly, was there a color issue here? Were these kids mostly white?
Yeah, they were mostly white.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, all it is, yeah, I don't understand the whole thing because it was just a fight. I mean, the kid, he's not going to die of the, you know, the little accident he had.
In fact, the medical reports indicate that the 15-year-old minor, who the police found later that night when they came to the site of the party and found him bleeding from his head, he was, you know, the only person that was injured that night in any degree and is expected to 100% recovery.
What was the name of the victim?
The Gutierrez family does not wish to release the name of the victim.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we did hear it in open court.
Mm-hmm. Was there any history, Juan, between Mike and this victim or anybody else at the party?
No, not at all. No, I mean, my brother didn't even know. I mean, he knew who the kid was, but he never, you know, talked to him or nothing. He just knew who the guy was, you know, because he's seen him around and stuff. But another thing about that whole situation is that, you know, this kid was drunk. He was passed out already. It was like probably, I don't know, 12 or 11 o'clock when this fight broke out or something.
Mm-hmm.
This kid was already passed out inside a car, drunk. He hears somebody, you know, arguing and stuff, so he gets up and sees the biggest guy, you know, the biggest guy there. He sucker punched my brother.
Where did he punch him?
In the face, in the jaw.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother, like, you know, turned around and, you know, looked at him and laughed, saying, like, you know, the guy was saying, come on. And my brother looked at him and said, come on, dude, you know, I'll squash you. I'm a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
So this kid just started swinging, and all of a sudden, like, four other guys jumped on my brother. My brother's like, hey, wait a minute, you know. One was a joke, but all these other guys, you know, mm-hmm. something to worry about.
Are we clear that this the smaller guy that attacked your brother, is he the 15-year-old minor? Do we know that, even know that for sure?
Yeah, he's the one that attacked my
brother. Oh, okay, so.
So what kind of injuries did the 15-year-old suffer?
He just had like a fracture in the head or something. Nothing major. When he went to the hospital, he went like 7 hours later. He was still intoxicated, and the doctor just sewed him up. And later on, when they did like a CAT scan or something on him,
mm-hmm.
They found that it was cracked. So they reopened the cut, the wound, and they cleaned it out a little, and then sewed it back up, and that was it. But when we were in court, they were saying that the guy had like a plate in his head, like 7 plates in his head, wires holding his head together. The guy was going to be able to speak. Just a whole bunch of issues, making him blow my brother look really bad.
Well, were these statements false in your view, Juan?
Yeah. I mean, my brother's a big guy, and they're saying my brother hit him like with an axe motion on the guy's head.
He went with the golf club.
7
yeah.
times were the allegations that Michael had hit this minor 7 times in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Something that Michael has no memory of, even though Michael was one of the few people who was not intoxicated at that party.
Now, Michael had had a couple of beers, right?
Earlier in the day and before he came to the party, and as Juan described, he's about 240 pounds, and had I think it was three beers earlier in the day.
Is that accurate, Juan?
Yeah.
Now, Maria Gutierrez, when she was speaking in front of Judge Robert Attic,
that's Michael's mother.
She said something yeah. about him having had 2 or 3 beers earlier in the day,
mm-hmm.
and Attic says, "Oh, now you're saying two more beers, 2, 3 earlier, 2 now. That's 5 beers." And you know, Attic was just like making it up on the stand. It was very shocking
let me,
for those of us who were following this case.
Let me summarize briefly because we're kind of jumping ahead, but maybe we should so people can understand what's going on. Eventually, Michael was sentenced to 8 years in San Quentin. Is that right?
Well, that's San Quentin. They, I guess he gets shipped there, and then from there, he ships him to wherever he's going to go.
I see, but in state prison.
Yeah.
And he, this is for essentially, if we are to believe him, and I tend to at this point, defending himself from attacks by 4 people.
Yeah.
Now, he never got a trial on this issue because I guess we should get into that too. But before we do, let's kind of backtrack a bit.
There was some things. He did have a preliminary hearing.
Right. I don't want to get into the hearings yet, but I do want to mm-hmm. cover that. What were the extent of Michael himself injured?
My brother? No.
And you say he only heard about this 3 weeks later?
Yeah.
So in other words, the police did not feel it was sufficiently serious to charge him
right away. No.
In other words, he wasn't regarded as a menace to the community.
There was actually a fact-finding mission done by one particular police officer, who, by the way, was a very close friend of the victim's mother, and he's the one that sort of went around and found witnesses days, weeks after the incident.
Who was the police officer?
Built the case.
What was his name?
Well, Juan would know that.
Escalante?
Officer Escalante.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did Officer Escalante have something against your brother?
I think he's a gang task force guy. He's a cop in charge of all the gang stuff. And I mean, my brother has nothing, no record, no nothing. But yet, this guy said my brother was a known gangster. He was trying to accuse my brother as a gangster.
A gang member?
Yeah. Saying that my brother's a gang-affiliated gang member and that he's well-known. And my brother has no record, no nothing. My brother's a good kid. You know, he was going to school, been out of trouble, and, you know.
Did your brother have any record of any arrests for violent crimes?
None.
Did he have any arrests for drug crimes?
None.
There was some business made at Judge Attuck's sentencing hearing where he essentially threw the book at your brother.
He's trying to make an example of him because he wants to make an example of him.
Right, although to make an example of a person who essentially is not a gang member seems a strange way to go about it. He claimed that your brother had problems at school or something?
Yeah, he was saying that my brother was a troublemaker in school, which he wasn't, you know. It was just...
He actually claimed that Michael had been expelled from school twice for violence. And there were two incidents at the school where some people were expelled for violence. And Michael sort of was in the wrong place at the wrong time on those two cases, but he wasn't directly involved.
What was that about, Juan?
I don't recall. Maybe she can refresh my memory.
That's just something that Claudia shared with me, and it was such...
Claudia, of course, is your sister?
And Claudia is really the spokesperson for the Gutierrez family on this event.
Yeah, see, it wasn't pretty big because, you know, I didn't really hear about it, so it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, you probably got, you know, suspended. Spells is when you get kicked out of the district, isn't it?
Yeah, so he was not expelled from school.
He wasn't. Oh. He was probably just gotten suspended. So.
And we don't know what that incident was?
No.
And was that recent or was that some time ago?
My brother's 24, you know.
This was like 5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah, a while ago.
They were really reaching to come and to paint Michael as being a violent person based on these incidences. These incidents do not, if you look at them closely, they certainly, if anything, they show that the authorities are willing to paint a wide brush. At, you know, anybody that's in the vicinity sort of gets it. Guilty parties.
It makes money for the police department too to show that there's a lot of gang crime in the area that needs to be dealt with. That's more funding for the local police department from the feds. You know.
Well, what was really shocking in this case was that extra 3 years that Judge Attuck added on for gang affiliations, and it was based on just bizarre evidence. I think you could probably go into anyone's home
before
in Santa Cruz and discover similar evidence.
Well, before we get into that,
activity.
And I think we should point out that I guess your brother was then taken to jail. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And when did that happen?
Like November the 20th.
And what was he charged with?
Two counts of attempted murder.
Attempted murder.
Yeah.
And he was held for how long in jail?
Like 8 or 9 months.
Eight or nine months.
Yeah, he just recently got sentenced, like a month ago.
and this is for, as we understand it, defending himself from attacks by four youths. Now, was, I don't want to play the race card here, as they say, but was this a race thing, or was it just a drunken sort of thing?
No, it was totally a race thing, I think. I mean, they bent backwards trying to make my brother look bad.
But I mean, the actual conflict as it happened, the initial fight.
No, just the actual thing was just a regular old fight.
Had nothing to do with race stuff.
The guy that actually started the fight was another Mexican guy that was not even from Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Was a Chinese guy. And my brother's like, you know, his friend was Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And he just jumped in and said, hey man, you know, break it up, you know, this is a party, let's have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
That's when, like, the girls all stopped, you know, stopped fighting, and that's when that other kid jumped out of the car and sucker punched my brother.
Mm-hmm.
That's when everything happened.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any conversations with any of the people involved in the fight, either before or after your brother went to jail for 8 months, and now, of course, is going to, unless he wins his appeal, is going to prison for 8 years, who gave you any further insight into this, Juan? Did you talk to anybody who saw it, or do you have any of the people involved?
Well, his friend, you know, they said that the girl, like, was there, she said that, you know, they're like, it was just a fight, you know, a regular fight. I don't see why, you know, what the big deal is.
Did she describe it as attempted murder?
No, she described it like, hey, you know, it was just a fight, you know, it broke out, you know, they fought, you know, boom, it left, it was over, it wasn't a big deal, it was just a regular fight.
Well, Judge Attic in court and painted a picture of this
violent group of youngsters just causing problems, going to parties and stuff.
You know, well, this one big guy, again and again, attacking a defenseless man on the ground with a golf club, beating him into the ground. Did you get any indication, did anybody confirm this, or did they have a different view?
No, he did it. He made even people that went to court to support my brother,
mm-hmm.
he made them feel like, you know, they weren't adequate enough, they didn't know what they were there for. He was saying, like, these people don't know what the hell they're doing here. Why they're here, they don't know none of the details, and this guy's a real criminal. He totally paid my brother to be total.
That's what Attic did, but what I'm saying is, from your understanding, talking to this woman who was at the party, did your brother hammer at a guy on the ground with a golf club in an attempt to kill him?
No.
What happened?
She just said, she's like, he got in a fight, and that was it. That's all she said.
She didn't describe exactly, you know, what happened with respect to the golf club.
Did she witness the entire fight?
Nah, she was, you know, witnessing all of it, you know, but she didn't say my brother.
I mean,
one would have, did she witness the part where he had the golf club in his hand?
I don't recall.
You know, it would seem to me that if one person really tried to kill another person, that would be in the community pretty fast, and it would result in an arrest fairly quickly. And yet the police came to your house, you say, 3 weeks later.
I think it was probably like more than...
No, 45 days.
45 days later?
He was arrested 45 days after the October 5th incident.
So he then went to jail, and what kind of bail did they have on him?
Like $300,000 or something like that.
Which you guys, not being too rich, just weren't able to put up, I guess, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
And you then went to try to get a lawyer, or did you get a public defender? What happened then?
We got a public defender first, and they were telling him he was going to get 27 years. So then my mom got him another lawyer,
mm-hmm.
and this lawyer tried to screw us, too.
How did he try to screw you?
He just, you know, he wasn't doing nothing. He was saying he was doing things, and he would do them. He would tell my mom that he was going to go see my brother at jail to talk to him about situations and problems. He never go. And when, you know, when it came down to, like, they were going to plead to something lesser, he wanted to get my brother. He was just, you know, they didn't, you know, involve us in nothing. You know, he was just, like, trying to get over the court, just get it done with, and so we can get paid, and that was it.
How much money did this lawyer end up sucking out of your family?
$5,000.
And so you then got a third lawyer?
Yeah.
And the third lawyer,
Bill Minkner.
Yeah, Bill Minkner.
How did he, I mean, your brother was entitled to a jury trial, and yet somehow he never got one. How did that happen?
Well, it was because the DA was going to use a porcelain head, and she was going to hit it over the head with a golf club, and this is what Minkner said, that, you know, that was going to look really bad on my brother, and that, you know, people, a jury, they weren't going to, like, you know, think, you know, look, they're going to look at my brother and say, look how big this guy is, and look how big this other little kid is.
So Minkner talked your brother into abandoning his jury trial rights.
Was it Minkner?
No, it was, you know, it was the whole thing,
I mean, I don't remember it all, but...
Mm. Yeah, that's what we'd like to know, is which attorney was handling the case when Michael pleaded no contest.
Minkner.
It was Minkner.
Yeah.
But you feel that Minkner made the right choice, or...?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so
right.
I don't know everything into the details of, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way he was explaining it was, you know, it was a chance that my brother could spend, like, more than, you know, 8 years in jail. They were trying to give him, like, 28 or some, you know, they were trying to give him some high number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother's fairly young. He's only 20. He was 23 when he got arrested, but mm-hmm. 24. But, yeah, he didn't want to spend all his life in jail for some stupid, you know, party.
What I thought was also interesting at the preliminary hearing, Robert,
mm-hmm.
was that this 15-year-old, the one who had been injured, described that he had been beaten repeatedly in the head at that party by an entirely different person. And that the person had full closed fist blows against his head. And he said that it didn't bother him at all. It felt like a light massage was his description. So
that was another guy.
Yeah, right. So
what about that one?
That's the assault that this victim can remember.
So tell us about that one. Do you know anything about that?
No, that was a different guy.
Right, it was not Michael.
This happened before the thing?
At the same party.
Yeah, that's the guy that actually grabbed the golf club, tried, like, you know, was wrestling with my brother.
Uh-huh.
And he said that after my brother and him, you know, scuffled around, he had fallen or somebody had hit him in the head like 20 or 30 times in the back of the head, but it felt like a light massage to him. That's what he told the lawyer. You know, the lawyer asked him, Minkner asked him, did it hurt? And he's like, you know, to a lesser person, yeah, but to me, it felt like a light massage. And then Minkner asked him if he was stoned. He goes, yeah, you know, it helps me clear out my head so I can drive better and, you know, I understand everything better because I'm stoned. That's what he said.
Now, the preliminary hearing, I actually went to one hearing. I guess I went to the sentencing hearing.
Yeah.
The preliminary hearing was held, sometime in the summer?
Yeah.
And this was after your brother had spent three-quarters of a year in jail?
Yeah.
Was that in front of Judge Attic as well?
Actually, it was in front of, like, six or other something judges.
Six other judges?
Yeah, there was quite a few of them. They would bounce from one. At first it was Attic, and then he bounced another one, I'm not sure. But just back and forth, the judge. So, like, when everything started, not all of them heard the whole thing. You know, they didn't hear the whole, you know, all the people testifying, everything in it. Well, you know what's weird, too?
Fine.
Is that when they arrested my brother, it was like they simultaneously did, like, six other, like,
one
of his friends. So, like, they all got my brother's friends for something or another. Made them not want to testify, you know, they kind of threatened them not to testify.
Hmm.
And they all got, you know, they got some kind of like probation and stuff like that. This is, it was all, I don't know, it was wrong.
So are you saying that people who might have found your brother innocent were discouraged from testifying?
Exactly. It just, the guy that actually was the one that started the fight, not started the fight, but the one that was in the first fight,
mm-hmm.
Matt Turner, he got a fine of $10,000 in a year in jail for just the fight.
Really?
Yeah, just the fight. He got $10,000 in a year in jail.
Wow.
And this was the previous fight or the same fight?
Same fight.
And he's the one who started, and then this other youth threw the punch at your brother.
Yeah.
Right. I see. I got you. Because it was originally a fight your brother was breaking up.
Yeah.
Well, so you at the preliminary hearing, I guess. So his name is Minkner. Is that right?
Yeah, the lawyer.
Yeah. He persuaded you and your family and your brother that the best thing to do was to cop a plea.
Well, he didn't, you know, he said this is pretty much, you know.
He gave you the options.
Yeah, he gave us the options and said, look, this is what you could get, you know, he thought we could go to trial, and this is what the DA is going to do, you know, look bad, you know. So, I don't know if people, you know, find it, you know, I don't know,
well,
so you're not angry with the lawyer then? You think the lawyer gave you the best advice, or?
I think he did a pretty good job.
Uh-huh. I tend to be somewhat critical of lawyers who give away their clients' jury trial rights. I really get upset with that, particularly when 8 years in prison is at stake, or five years.
And there was such a strong case here for self-defense.
Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, the cops are making it totally, I mean, I don't understand why they're trying to make my brother into an example. My brother has no prior record or nothing. And I mean, I know people that have done, like, worse things, and they just, like, slap them on the wrist and say, don't do it again. Okay, you can go home. And I know people that are drug dealers and they've gotten caught with a lot of money and drugs and everything, but they're still out. It's just wrong.
In fact, one wonders why any charges were not made against the people who were hosting this party when they were allowing minors to be drinking alcohol.
Well, they're minors themselves, I think, too.
So there were no adults at this party?
No, I don't think so.
How many people, Juan, were eventually charged with criminal behavior from all this, do you know?
I think it was my brother's friend, Matt, and my brother.
So none of the people who were not, shall we say, connected with your brother got charged? That you know of?
Of all the other people?
Yeah.
Marty? None of them.
And you said this wasn't a race thing because it was sort of a mixed party.
Yeah.
But was it a class thing? I mean, were the people who were running the party, you know...
This is what I heard about what that initial fight was about, was that Matt has sort of a reputation of what Claudia called a gang wannabe, that he had sort of adopted some of the little mannerisms, and when he ran into this Mexican guy who was not from the area, he actually ran into someone who really had genuine gang affiliations, and that guy took such issue with Matt over his pretense of being in gangs that's what the fight started about.
Is it? What do you think? Is that accurate, one?
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
Now let's turn to the actual sentencing hearing, which is what really outraged many of us. I was at the hearing, and I guess the entire room was, there wasn't any place to sit down. I mean, you had to kind of stand in the back and wait for a seat.
The judge was being mean about that, too. He's saying it wasn't a carnival to find a seat or get out. He was just being rude to everybody there.
Tell us your impression of the judge, and describe the hearing and some things you remember, Juan.
Let me tell you. You know, everybody went, wow. You know, half our whole family was there, which, you know, filled the whole room, and the judge was just being totally mean to everybody, saying that, you know, find a seat, get out, this is not a carnival, find a seat, and people that went to go talk to her, like, you know, for my brother, he was telling everybody that they don't know what they're doing there, they don't know everything that happened, that my brother's a criminal, and my brother totally beat this guy up, and that my brother shouldn't be out walking around the street.
There were 54 letters of support for Michael, and Judge Attuck went through and found tiny little errors in some of those letters, and was able to say that all the people who wrote those letters didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah, he totally jumped on everybody's case about it. I mean, he, like, totally made my brother look like a total criminal and made this kid look like a saint. The kid with a criminal record and making my brother look like a criminal to him.
So the man that, the youth that was hit had a criminal record?
Yeah.
What was his criminal record?
I don't know it, but he had, like, problems with the cops and stuff like that, you know.
I see.
But the whole thing is that they made my brother look bad, and I think it's just because, you know, the mom knew the lawyer, knew the DA. She knew him from school, and she knew the cop, Scalante. I guess they were probably going out when they were younger or something.
Mm-hmm.
So he bent backwards to help them out. Like.
And your brother is paying the price.
Exactly.
What's the next step here? Is there some legal hearing coming down the road where the sentence can be mitigated, or what's the start situation?
3 months. They said he has to wait 3 months until he can appeal it, and then we go back to court and try to...
But in this 3-month period, the family still has the opportunity to go back before the same judge and
asked that the sentence be reduced. And so the Gutierrez family is looking for letters of support and asking for clemency in this case to reduce the sentence. And those letters should be addressed to Judge Robert Attick, that's A-T-A-C-K, at 701 Ocean Street, Santa Cruz, California.
Maybe should people send the letters first to your mom, Juan, to Michael's mom, in order for him, her to look them over and see if she wants them sent to the judge, or how should that be done? Do you think that's the best way to go about that?
Yeah, they can do that. They can.
And do you have an address that people can send the letters to?
Yeah, they can do it to our house.
Okay.
It's 2245 South Rodeo Gulch.
2245.
South Rodeo Gulch.
South Rodeo Gulch.
Yeah.
And what's your zip code?
95062.
Santa Cruz 95062.
Yeah.
Again, the numbers are
2245
South Rodeo Gulch.
Gulch.
Santa Cruz 95062.
Yeah.
And that's to Maria Gutierrez.
Yeah. Right.
Is there anything more you want to say about this case, Juan, that you think the public needs to know?
There's a lot I want to say, but if I get into detail, I'm just going to get too upset, you know. I mean, the whole thing is just wrong, the way they did it. They were trying to make my brother look like a gangster. Using a few years back, I got stabbed at a movie. We went to the movie. We had nothing to do, and we were at the wrong place at the right time, I guess, or something.
Mm-hmm.
We were at the wrong place at the right time, and I got stabbed, and they tried to make my brother look like a gangster because I got stabbed at the movie.
You got stabbed? Well, what should we ask you about this?
I was just little gangster kids that just trying to, you know, saw a movie and got excited and just saw the first guy they saw and went after him.
And was anyone ever charged in that case?
No. And see, that guy stabbed me twice in the back, you know, right next to my liver. And I could have been killed. But the guy got...
So the police showed very little concern about one being stabbed in the back.
Yeah.
But, you know, in this case, the police are, and the courts are apparently willing to throw the book.
And this guy, too, prior to this, stabbing me, had stabbed somebody else. Now he's in jail for raping some girl, statutory rape or something like that, and they only gave him, like, 2 years in jail for that. Not for my being stabbed or the other guy that got stabbed. But
so,
for statutory rape, he got 2 years.
So how when did this when were you stabbed, Juan?
In 94.
In 94. Wow.